What up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. You're going to love it. Nico Medved, head coach of Colorado State, will take us through his kind of mercurial journey from a student manager at Minnesota to being an assistant coach at Colorado State, all the way back to being the head coach at Colorado State. And they're picked to win the league. I really like his team as well. I'll kind of go through some of the things I see from his team. He'll take you through it as well. I want to start. And by the way, this pod has been doing exceptionally well. I've gotten so many DMs and messages on Instagram at Gottlieb Show or on Twitter at Gottlieb Show that we continue to line up these guests and knock them out. It's going to be some good ones in the upcoming days. Let me start with college basketball because I attended the Villanova UCLA game and it was a good basketball game. It was a great crowd, especially for UCLA, kind of a wine and cheese crowd normally. And they were into it. The students were phenomenal. And look, UCLA maintains their number two ranking. They're going to get a chance at number one. They're a really good basketball club. And I think, you know, as you know, the one freshman they have kind of develops, he's the one guy who can really break people down. But they're getting a lot out of their guys. They defend incredibly well. And their basic game plan was they weren't going to double off of all the post-ups for Villanova because that's where Villanova beats you, right? They don't have a blur. They don't have a guy that just breaks you down. And so the way in which they get to the rim is they post you, and as soon as you double, now they space, and they can all really shoot. They can shoot, pass, handle, defend, rebound. And the truth is that Villanova, Colin Gillespie had a drive there with like 2 minutes to go, dead layup, missed it. They make two layups, either of those two layups with like a minute and a half to go, they win the game. They don't. UCLA comes back and sends it to overtime. And I thought they got a favorable whistle there at the end of regulation. And I thought Villanova got fouled in the last play, but they didn't call it. And, you know, they make all 12 free throws and win in overtime fairly handily. But the score not representative of how close the game is. They're two really, really good teams. I guess my fear is with either of those teams, and Juzang got it going in the second half and just was rolling. My fear with either of those teams is, though they have guys that will play in the NBA, they don't have a, hey, go get me a bucket sort of guy. And I don't know. I mean, Juzang is that guy at the college level, but you don't have the explosive first step guy that can give you real problems. That's what I think is missing. But both of those teams, and Nova is not yet healthy in their front court with some of their younger players, but both are big, strong, tremendous defensively. And for an early season game, I thought that and the Gonzaga-Texas game was amazing. All right, we'll get back to that shortly. First, though, let's catch up with the head coach of Colorado State. Here's Nico Medved.
I usually like to go total chronological order. But I'm fascinated by Tim Miles. He won his 400th game. I know how close you guys are. And I mean, obviously now you occupy a seat that he once occupied. And that's one of the things that brought you back to FOCO. You first met Tim Miles where and when?
So we were both upper Midwest guys. When he was at North Dakota State and I was kind of growing up in the business, we had met, you know, through a lot of circles that you meet in basketball. And, when I went down to Furman as an assistant, I would still recruit the upper Midwest a lot. And he and I would, you know, be in a lot of the same gyms again and talked a lot of hoops. And we'd go up to a high school game in Minneapolis and, hey, you're going to be there tonight. And yeah, so we decided to go to a favorite watering hole or whatever it was and have dinner before games or get together after games. And so we developed a great relationship. And then when he got the job here at CSU, he called and asked if I wanted to come with him. And so it was just kind of a relationship that we had met throughout the years coming up in the business. And then, yeah, we got fortunate enough to work together here at CSU.
How did you decide to get in the business? Like, what was it that said, hey, I want to be a basketball coach?
It's crazy. I played all these sports growing up. I grew up in Minnesota and I started playing hockey. And it was kind of a funny story. Like my parents, you know, I was in all the youth hockey programs. If you know anything about Minnesota, I mean, I played growing up with two guys that played in the NHL, you know, and, it was expensive. The travel was brutal. And when I was in eighth grade, basically I couldn't play hockey anymore for a variety of reasons. And I went over and started playing basketball. I fell in love with it. And I knew right then I wanted to coach. It's crazy, Doug. I mean, I never wanted to do anything else. And that's how I got into it. And I thought, hey, if I could ever be the high school coach in my town, you know, growing up, that'd be the coolest job ever. As I saw the impact these guys had, just couldn't think of anything better, being in the gym, coaching, game planning. And then, yeah, it kind of evolved from there. And then I decided I wanted to do it at the highest level. And at that point in time, growing up, there were no other Division I schools in Minnesota, right? You had the University of Minnesota, all those Dakotas at the time, North Dakota, North Dakota State, South Dakota, they were all in the old NSIC. They were all Division II. And so I wanted to do it at the highest level. My dad grew up taking me to all the University of Minnesota basketball games. And so I went and got involved that way as a manager, GA, the whole deal.
With Clem?
Yeah, with Clem. And I still keep in touch with Clem a little bit today. And Clem was awesome for me. I mean, he got me in the Nike All-American camps when I was a younger. And a lot of these guys in the business here were working those camps back in the day. And it really just all kind of evolved from there. And here I am sitting here today.
Okay, so you're at Minnesota. What year is this?
So my last year was 96. It was the year before they went to the Final Four, but I was, you know, I was there when, you know, Bobby Jackson and all those guys came in. And, Bobby Jackson's the only guy, Doug, that I remember in a pick, you go to a pickup game, right? And all the guys used to play, at Clem's camps in the summer, and the NBA guys, whatever, would come in. Bobby Jackson's the only guy I ever saw who could pick up somebody full court in a pickup game, and they couldn't get the ball over half court. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. He led the Big Ten in rebounding that year as a point guard.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
I play with Willie Burton.
Really?
Yeah. I play with Willie first in the USBL. Right out of college, I played in the USBL. We had an unbelievable team. And then when I went to Russia that same year, they needed a big guy. They needed a big wing. And they called me in and they said, "Do you know Scott Burrell?" I was like, "Well, yeah, he played for the Bulls." "Do you know Willie Burton?" I was like, "Yeah, I play with Willie." He's like, "Do you want, which one do you want?" I was like, "I want Willie because I know Willie." So Willie, I got to get him on the pod. He's got some interesting stories, but he used to, in the USBL, he'd get the ball at least once a game. He'd get it just off the post and he had these gigantic hands. He'd catch the ball one hand. He'd go, "Illegal!" And it would work once a game and everybody's head would turn and he'd spin and dunk the basketball. So we go to Russia, right? Remember, there's no illegal defense.
Yeah.
And most people don't speak English. We're in Perm, Russia. So we're not in Moscow, although we beat the Moscow team that year. And I'll never forget, like, it's the very first game. He's like, yo, DG. So I throw it to him and he goes, "Illegal." And everybody looks, he spins and he dunks. I was like, "Willie, how did you know that shit worked?" He's like, "Man, that shit's universal, DG. That's universal." It was so funny.
That's one of the guys, like, I grew up when I was, you know, coming up and I'd go to all the Gopher games and Clem was getting that program, you know, cranking. And I mean, Willie was, people forget how good he was. So.
And he's the kind of guy that his style of play would be even better now than it was then, because
great point.
He'd guard anybody and he could score. You know, he's 1-4 defender and scorer. Did you know all that stuff was going on when you're in Minnesota?
No, I mean, it's such a bizarre thing, you know, as I reflect, you know, back on it and you learn a lot, you know, when you kind of look back and say, man, you know, should I have known this or known that? But it's also a great lesson for us how all those things in these big organizations can evolve, you know, without oversight, without really understanding what's going on, what everybody's doing in your organization. And it's really, I mean, all of it's tragic for so many reasons. And, you know, I know all these guys that played for Clem and that were there, still keep in touch with him today and the way that he impacted all these young men and what he did for them in that program, you know, it just gets tarnished and it's too bad, but yeah, I think it's a great lesson for all of us. You know, you're in these organizations and you have to have an understanding of everything that's going on and don't take anything for granted, because as you know, how easy it is for something to get torn down and how hard it is to build.
So you're at Minnesota and you're like, okay, I want to do this thing. What do you do next?
So I, when I left there, I went and I wanted to get my master's degree because I thought, hey, if I ever wanted to coach at small college, a lot of times you have to have a master's, you know, if it was a D2, D3 job, whatever it was. So I went to McAllister College and was the associate head coach.
Where's that? Where's McAllister?
Right in the Twin Cities there. So about 15 minutes, they're in their Division III school. What I loved about it is you have to do everything, right? You coach, recruit, schedule, clean the floors. I mean, you name it. But I was also,
You love that.
I just love being around it, you know, and then, so
you, how's your floor cleaning game? Cause I will tell you now coaching AU basketball, like I'm a fanatic about the floor being cleaned.
I got to brush up my skills because you get soft, you get to do, everybody does everything for you now. You don't even know who's cleaning the floors.
So, okay. So are you a dry mop or a wet mop kind of guy? That's the whole thing.
I think, you know, you're normally a dry mop, but every once in a while you gotta bust out the wet mop, you know, to get the dust off. And, but anyway, so I'm in the Twin Cities there. And again, for me, the recruiting base, you're out high school games every night, you're coaching. And then long story short, I finished my master's. Larry Davis, who was an assistant at the University of Minnesota, gets the head coaching job at Furman. And he ends up hiring me, which was my break. That was the whole master plan, is to get somebody to give me a shot into Division I. And funny story, things come full circle. I took Ryan Odom's job. Ryan Odom was, and that was back when they were still had kind of the restricted earnings deal. Ryan Odom left there to go take a job at UNC Asheville. I took Ryan Odom's job, and now Ryan and I are coaching together in the Mountain West. It's just kind of crazy how things happen.
It really is. Okay, so you're 23?
Yep.
But by the way, why not coach hockey?
I didn't, you know, it's funny. That's
you're in Minnesota. Like who goes like basketball? Like why not coach hockey?
But what's funny is basketball was booming and it like basketball, like, I mean, look at how many top players in the country are coming out of the Twin Cities now. And I think it all started with Minnesota basketball with Clem Haskins. And when that thing started to turn and they started winning and they went to the Sweet 16 and the Final Eight, it's funny that coincided, in my opinion, with high school basketball starting to boom in that area. And so it was just timing, right? For me. And, but yeah, it really was a no brainer. I mean, basketball is the greatest team sport there is. You learn so much, about yourself and others, and it's such a beautiful game. And so that was easy for me and, to want to do that. And yeah, so we go down to Furman and that was my break into Division I. And
okay, so how old are you this age?
I'm 48.
No. When you go to Furman, how old were you?
God, I'm thinking, like you said, Ben, the years run together. I think I was 23.
Okay, so
right there.
This is a different part of the country. Like Furman is a beautiful campus.
Crazy.
Like, so Larry calls you and says, and he calls you and offers you a job. Do you know where Furman is? Do you know about the school?
No, I mean, I'll never forget.
And you're making what?
25. I mean, you know, 25.
Okay, so where'd you live?
I lived in a little apartment with our GA, down there, just off campus, a little 2-bedroom unit that they helped provide for you. I mean, it was what you do, but you call, they offer you the job, you take it in 30 seconds and you say, hey, I'm moving, and you pack up. I had an old Honda Accord. I packed up everything I owned. I got in the car. I had no idea where I was going and drove across the country and started a new job. I mean, that's just kind of what you do.
So what was Larry like to work for?
Larry was an unbelievable worker. I think he taught me about recruiting in this business. I mean, how hard you had to work, all the angles in recruiting, things that I never even thought about before. He was terrific at individual skill instruction. He's an old 5-star guy back in the day, you know, and he worked for Dave Odom. And so I thought he taught me that. And then, you know, he really gave me a lot of responsibility for a young coach. And I was fortunate, the guys that I worked for who did that for me, who really allowed me to go out there to coach, to recruit, to learn how to do it on the fly. So I learned a ton from him that way, how to work in this business.
So when you say he taught me a lot about recruiting, like you don't have to give away all the secrets, but like,
I think, number one, I mean, it sounds crazy. It's a clear, you know, how do you work, but, you know, knowing how to work, who to call, leaving no stone unturned, you know, and everybody will say that the champions of guys, but just, really understanding, you know, the amount of time you have to put in and understanding all the angles. And I think the other thing about recruiting is it's understanding who can you actually get and who's good enough.
Who can you get and who can you get that you want?
Yeah. And a lot of people waste a lot of time. You know, you work hard and you waste a lot of time when you can really identify early on. That's fine. Everyone's going to tell you they like you, but we're not getting this guy at the end of the day, you know? And I think understanding all those angles, building relationships, understanding where you need to go and where you can go to get talent. I mean, we're down at Furman and it's funny as we're in this beautiful area, we've got players in our region. We needed to recruit in our region, but we also understood with the way people viewed the program, we had to go other places. So we recruited the Midwest a lot at Furman and we had a lot of success. And then now, obviously, you know, the rest is, I came back as the head coach, the program's turned. Now it's really viewed as a great program, but it wasn't at the time when we got there. So we had to turn over a lot of stones to recruit.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
So your first, do you remember what it was like? Your first there, you're at Furman and program's not very good. Like how many people in the stands? What was it like?
A couple hundred, 300-400, you know, maybe we'd play a conference game, you know, as somebody good down the road. I mean, Davidson was in our league at that point when I was an assistant, you know, you might have a good crowd for that, but we were poor. And it just, you know, and I ended up leaving it and my career kind of moved forward. And then I came back as the head coach and I think when I was a head coach there, Doug, I got the job. We were 336 out of 351 in the RPI when I got there. It was brutal, buddy.
Okay, so we'll get to that. Okay, yeah. So what led you to leave?
Larry ended up taking the job with Mick at Cincinnati, you know, late in the summer that year. And
how many years in does he take it?
Oh God, what was I, Doug? That's a great question. Was it 6 years in? I think it was 5 or 6. And you know, we had just, you know, a couple years ago, we had started to look like we were turning the program and getting better. But he offered Larry the associate head coaching job at Cincinnati. And I think Larry felt like, gosh, in his mind, he had done all he could do there. You know, I thought I maybe even had an opportunity to get the head job, but looking back on it, are you kidding me? I wasn't ready for that. They weren't going to hire a guy like me. And so, I ended up leaving, there and I ended up at Minnesota actually for a year as an assistant. And then I went with Tim to Colorado State and kind of the rest has transpired from there. But that's what had happened at that point in time. They hired Jeff Jackson at Furman after Larry had left. And, it's kind of funny. I ended up leaving. It ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me because sometimes you just need a fresh start and a change.
You went to Minnesota for a year. Was Munson there?
Yeah. Broke for Dan.
I mean, I don't know if you heard his pod with me. He's hysterical. He's an amazing dude.
He's one of the best humans ever.
Yes. Yes. How good, because there were some years that were good. There's some mercurial years. I remember the last year because he took his son with him on every road trip because he knew it was his last year. What year was this in his run?
So again, the years, but it was the year that Dan ended up getting let go 7 games into the year. We go down to, you know, we played poorly in the tournament down in Orlando. We come back, we get beat badly by Clemson at home and they decided to make a change. And then Jim Molinari took over.
I did the Clemson game.
Were you there?
Yes, I did the Clemson game.
So that was his last game there. And you know, it just all of
he
it.
Did the pot. Here's how good his memory is. He did the pot. He's like, I'm not going to get fired after this pot, am I?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man.
And I've known Munz forever, right? Forever. So but honestly, what's that feeling like where, look, you break into this business, you get a job. Your head coach leaves and you go back home and you're at the U and like, you know, for a kid who grows up in Minnesota and dreaming of Minnesota basketball as Minnesota manager, this is pretty cool. And then 7 games in and I'm sure you knew taking it, like a lot of people were like,
yeah,
last year, but I don't think you knew 7 games in. What is that experience like in terms of calling your folks and your friends and what you're going to do next?
You know, it's funny, you know, you go through that and some people are like, gosh, are you sure you really want to do this? And I never considered anything else. It's really what I wanted. And what's really funny is I look back on it now, it was such a weird time, but I remember, Mo ends up getting, they name him interim coach. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh man, like you're really in it now. It's like, you know, you start doing, you're doing almost all the scouts, you're doing all that. It's like,
You got bumped up. You're like, yeah, you got fired, but you got bumped up.
I mean, I'm doing more now. And it's like all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's fine. Well, you know, we're going to play, I think at that year, right. Ohio State and Wisconsin were 1-2 in the country. They had Greg Oden, you know, Lando Tucker, Wisconsin. And it's like, we have all these games coming up. And so you just kind of put your head down and start working. And like, I'm going to take this year to do whatever I can. And what's funny is I look back on it now, that was one of the best years I had in coaching, as far as I just had so much fun. You just kind of let go. You know that there's going to be a change at the end of the year, but you know what? I'm going to enjoy the heck out of this. I'm going to coach. I'm going to develop relationships with these guys. I'm going to enjoy every second of it. And that's what I did.
Okay. So, couple of things here. Munson as a coach. What is the skill of Dan Munson as a coach?
He's unbelievable with people. He's the kind of guy that people just want to be around every day, the staff, the players. He sees things. He's got such unbelievable emotional intelligence about people. And he's just a guy you want to be around. I mean, and that sounds like, you know, a big deal. That's a huge deal. People want to work for him. They want to be in the foxhole for him. He's just a tremendous human being. His family's awesome. So I think that's who he was. And I wish I would have got a chance to work for him longer than I did. But the one thing about him is, you know, we go out and at my first year back here, you know, we go out and we play at Long Beach. And he's the first guy, you know, it's before the game, Nico, come on in, you know, and let's spend time with him and before the game. And as you know who he is, he values relationships so much in this business. And, you feel like even if you work for him for a short period of time that you've known him forever.
It is a little bit of a throwback of how I think it used to be, where it was a lot more not collegial, but just, you know, it's like we're trying to kick each other's ass on the court, but you know, off the court, like we're kind of all in this crazy business together. Okay, so here's one you didn't know. My dad signed Jim Molinari at Creighton.
Are you serious? I just talked to him this morning on the way in too. Yeah.
So Coach Mo is an all-timer, a great coach. And then I think he left. My dad left. He left and he went to Western Illinois, right? Is where he played. And he started, kind of transferred down a level. So what was, I think I know the answer to this one, but Jim Molinari is a coach. What was his?
Incredible defensive coach. I mean, just incredible. The amount of detail, intensity, and he's a brilliant person. You know, Mo can, he's a little, I don't know what the right adjective I'm looking for, but he'll come up with these nuggets that are just, you know, amazing. But as far as basketball goes, he's an incredible defensive coach, and he learns so much from being around him.
So in terms of, you know, in terms of defense, in terms of building defense, and there's all different sorts of ways to do it philosophically. How do you do it? You know, I mean, like, look, I remember when I got to Oklahoma State, I played for John McLeod and, you know, I played for my dad. I played for a guy named Andy Ground, who's an outstanding high school coach, great junior college coach in Southern California. And, you know, we had rules and place your phone. And I just remember, like, Coach Sutton, we do one-on-one containment full court. And then we do one-on-one. And then we basically, you know, it's a lot of one-on-one defense.
Yep.
And I was like, Coach, we forcing, it was like my second or third practice. And I was like, Coach, we forcing baseline, we forcing middle. And he's like, excuse me? I was like, Coach, are we forcing baseline or are we forcing middle? I was like, guard your man, brother.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. We're not forcing him anywhere. Guard you. Yeah.
I was like, wait, no. But okay. Where's the help coming from? It's like, don't worry about help. Right. Don't worry about guarding your man.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't need help, Doug, if you're a good defender.
We did help from the baseline side and we did post seal and we worked on the rotations to it. Okay. And that was back in the hard hedge days of college basketball. So, in 2021, Nico Medved, when you build your team, how do you build it defensively?
So it's a great question. I mean, you know, my biggest mentor in the business is probably Dick Bennett. You know, he and I are really close and have formed a relationship. You know, when I started out, I was the pack line guy like everybody else. I think that, you know, as I look at the offensive side of the ball, I say, okay, well, what are the things that are difficult to go against? You know, for me, why aren't I incorporating more of those things? I think a few years back after my first year here at CSU, I started to change a little bit more and look at more of the no middle deal, you know, like Baylor and Texas Tech. One of the things that for me is I really like downing the side ball screens as a, but yeah, you have to have different coverages. I really like that. I think it keeps you out of rotation.
You also have to have it. And one of the things you'll be able to have it at Colorado State is you have to have athleticism that fits your defensive style, right?
That's exactly
like
right.
I always, to this day, I mean, I don't know if this has ever been uttered on it's on broadcast TV, but like, I still feel bad for Greg Paulus. Greg Paulus is at Duke. You know, Duke takes you out of everything they want to do. They want to pressure you. Like, he can't do it. You know, right. Couldn't do it. He's not built for it, you know? And so you have the benefit, you know, you've had, you know, the Carvaccio is a very good shot blocker, but you have those really athletic guards. So you can kind of decide what we want to do. So does that go hand in hand with keeping it to a side, or is it simply a mentality and a philosophy that you think you want to live by?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think being able to do that, I think that, you know, can you switch places where you want to switch? I know, like, you know, one of your guys, I think he's one of the best dudes ever, but Dutch, you know, at San Diego State, I mean, he has the way he recruits and the way he has his team, he has the ability to switch so many different actions and not really give up anything. And like you said, maybe your personnel doesn't allow you to do that. So you've got to be a little bit more conscious about, you know, where you give up a mismatch. But, you know, there's an old saying, right? What beats you, the mismatch or the open shot? And the open shot beats you. But I think you're right. Like, you look at your personnel and you may have something that you like to do, but you have to look at your team as well and say, okay, what can we execute? But I think I've evolved more that way. And then it's funny, your initial point, I think that, you know, you start to look at offenses right now and you can say, well, no middle, no baseline, but ultimately, I think depending on who you're playing, you've got to be able to level off the dribble and figure out how you're going to bring help. You want to, you know, eliminate easy paint scores, easy catch and shoot threes. It's easier said than done when more people can shoot threes at every position on the court. And so I think as offenses continue to evolve, you've got to continue to evolve defensively.
It's a great point. It's like, and Dutch is a perfect example of that. You know, when they first got there, they post doubled. You know, but everybody played two posts and used to throw it inside. And now everybody throws in the post. And, your Oral Roberts game, you know, they doubled from the baseline and you had two on the weak side and you have one as a cutter. Okay. So the help side guy takes the cutter. You got three after three after three after three, right? So like it was a, why do you need to double? I don't think you need to double in the post because if a guy takes a post shot, you know, over a hand, great. Right. You know, PP2-wise, that's not as good a shot as a step in three.
I think that's right. And like we doubled from the low side a couple of years ago. It's funny, as I studied us in the off season, I'm like, okay, well, that's great. We have to be able to at some point do that. But maybe it started to hurt us more. You know, you got to double Kenny Lofton. You might have to double Orlando Robinson in our league some or Nemish Keita, you know, but maybe not all the time. But you're right. I think that those things continue to evolve. And I agree. Like we really hurt Oral Roberts when they doubled the post. And then in the second half, they decided to adjust to play one-on-one and that didn't work for them. It was just one of those games, but you're right. You have to continue to evolve with your personnel and with the way teams play offense. And we played three games and everybody now has five guys who can shoot. Everybody's got these bigs who can shoot. And so, boy, you better look at what you're doing defensively to combat that.
Okay, so you're at Minnesota, and you're with Mo, and it comes to an end. When did Tim Miles call you about Colorado State?
You know, before the season ended, and this is interesting. He called before the season ended, and all this stuff was going down, and offered me the job, and I took it immediately. I loved Tim, and I couldn't. I was like, man, are you kidding me? This is a dream come true. I want to ride down there with him and let's go build this thing at Colorado State. I loved Colorado. I'd never been to CSU, but I was excited. Well, anyway, I had been working with Joel Maturi, was the AD at Minnesota. I'd been kind of working on our schedule. I'd been managing the team. I'd been kind of doing all the day-to-day stuff and had a great relationship with Joel. Well, Tim had offered me the job literally about 3 days later. Joel comes in my office and he says, "Hey, Nico, can you get the team, you know, together over there at 1 o'clock? He goes, "I just hired Tubby Smith." He goes, "And I need you to keep it quiet. I'm getting on a plane right now. We're going to pick him up." And you remember at that time, Tubby was that coach at Kentucky. It's like, what? Like, how is that? You leave Kentucky to go to Minnesota. And so anyway, Tubby ended up taking the job. I met with Tubby after that and he asked what I was doing. And I didn't even, I'm like, "Nah, coach, I'm going." I don't know that he would have hired me anyway, but I went and went with Tim. And so that was already done.
Before. Wait, so you told, you didn't say like, "I'm going with Tim, but I'd stay here." It's,
I didn't even say that. And I didn't, you know, I didn't know. And who knows what would have happened, but I had been talking with Tim a good bit at that point in time. And I was really excited to go work for him. And I don't know what would have happened, but at that point in time, it just felt like the perfect move for me to just get out of my comfort zone a little bit and go attack something new. And I had so much respect for what Tim and what he had done at NDSU and Southwest Minnesota State and how he had built programs and what he was as a coach. And so, that's what happened. And so I took off and went to CSU and the rest is, you know, rest is sort of history.
Okay. So you roll in, it's 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now this is where, I mean, that's a long time ago, considering how 2021, 2022, the head coach, and you've been there a couple of years. Okay. So, you roll in, what was the program like?
I've been in a lot of now. I've been fortunate to be in some situations. Well, not fortunate, but in some situations where things really needed to be rebuilt. That was an all-timer. I mean, we had one of the worst APR situations in the country. We had some off the court stuff going on that I don't know that I could even talk about on air, Doug. I mean, drugs, guns. I mean, it was a bad deal. And that first year, we ended up going 0-16 in the Mountain West. It was brutal. But you look at it and
so here's the thing about Tim Miles guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you guys are all kind of spread throughout. I love it's the upper Midwest. Like, dude, you guys have been in some upper Midwest is a new term to me. I thought he calls it, is it like the High Plains? What is it actually? What is that region? Anyway, there's some places where other human beings have never tried to go to win before or have come up. But anyway, Tim is one of those guys that like, even when he's going to get fired in Nebraska, and granted, he got a lot of money when he got fired in Nebraska, like he never seems to have an outwardly bad day, right? Everybody's a pretty good dude. You mentioned Dan Munson, all of the Tim Miles guys, you're like, everybody seems to have a good time and a guy you'd like to crack a beer with. But when you're 7-25 and you're 0-16, was there a moment there where you're sitting around going like, what did we get ourselves into?
Oh, there were a lot of those moments. It didn't take long where you're like, oh my God, this is like, what are we going to do here? But I think it goes back to the spirit that Tim, I mean, we all do, we have bad days and days where you're like, oh man, you know what, this losing's hard. Even if you know, you're like, hey, we're going to go through it this year a little bit. As a competitor, going through the losses is really hard. I mean, it's just, even if you know it's coming. But I think, you know, Tim's spirit and that belief in the process and the vision of just continuing to stay with it, I think really that was the driving force. And it taught me a lot, Doug, when I got my opportunity to have to go, you know, as a head coach and turn a program around, is just seeing all the things that went into that, developing a fan base, raising money, getting people to buy into your vision and your community around campus and most of all recruits. And so he was just such a pro at doing that. And it was just cool to see it all manifest the way that it did.
Do you remember your first win in the Mountain West?
God, that's a great question. So we won four the next year.
Yeah, I know.
I can't remember who we beat first. I really can't. I do remember the year we went 0-16, how we had both San Diego State and UNLV like on the ropes here, you know, on the ropes, like in the last two or three minutes, but you couldn't find a way to win. I also remember my first year, we go up the first year in 0-16, we actually won the Top of the World Classic in Fairbanks. That's another place most people never go to, but we, we won that tournament and we're thinking, oh man, you know, we're geniuses, you know? And then it went, you know, downhill from there. I don't remember who we beat first. That's a great question.
You beat UNLV.
Did we really? We beat Lon?
Yeah. And they had Joe Darger and Darius that brought Wink Adams and Trayvon Willis off the bench. So those guys were young. Right. And, Andy Ogidy.
Andy Ogidy. Yep. Andy Ogidy. He was a transfer. One of the first guys we took that sat out our first year.
Marcus Walker.
Marcus Walker. Yep.
Yeah. Andre McFarland, Harvey Perry, Travis Franklin, Willie Gardner. Right.
Adam Nygon. Adam Nygon does our color. Travis and Andre's a big time cop in Vegas right now. He does Homeland Security stuff. But it's funny, like Travis and Andre were here. One of those guys got married this summer. Andy's getting married this summer, and they came back and they were on campus this summer for the first time since they had left. Those are the fun things about coaching. But that crew right there, I can't believe, how the hell did we beat Lon?
I don't know. You guys had some crazy wins.
We did.
You know, you obviously beat Air Force, beat TCU. You beat Air Force twice, swept Air Force, and then lost Air Force in the tournament.
That I remember. The other thing I remember about the first year is we went 0-16, but we beat Wyoming in the first round of the conference tournament. And that year we went 0-16. So I guess that was our first Mountain West win in the conference tournament. That was like heaven. I mean, you beat Wyoming around here. That was awesome. So it made us feel good going into the offseason. At least we beat the Cowboys once.
Okay, so how did you... Then it made sense to go to Furman,
mm-hmm.
but how did it come to be where you got the Furman job?
I think, you know, I had obviously been there as an assistant. I had a great relationships with some of the people I knew, the current AD and a lot of the people around the university. And, so I became a candidate for the job. And obviously, you know, we had gone to back-to-back NCAA tournaments here, and they were following us, and I had an opportunity to interview for the job. And what's interesting about that is the two finalists for that job, Doug, were me and Chris Holtman, who was at Gardner-Webb at the time.
Wow.
And everybody knew Chris. I mean, it was just a phenomenal coach. Gardner-Webb's a tough, tough job. I think they had finished third, you know, in their league. But anyway, they decided to hire me instead of Chris. And what's funny is the best thing that ever happened to Chris was probably not getting the Furman job.
Right. Then he leaves and takes the Butler job.
Yeah.
Right?
And then the rest is history.
Yeah.
You know, he ends up getting the head job at Butler halfway through the year and so on and so forth. But it's just funny, again, how sometimes, you know, things in coaching work the way that they do. So then I ended up, they ended up hiring me, which was my big break. And again, we were so bad when I got there, but you want to be a Division I head coach, as you know how brutally tough these jobs are to get. But I had a vision. I had been there. I thought we had a lot to sell, and I was going to focus on who we were, not who we weren't. And, you know, it ended up, again, really tough first year and for most of the second year. And then, boy, once we turned the corner, we really took off at Furman.
Okay, that's it for part one of Nico Medved. I thought you'd really enjoy that. Part two will take us through what it was like when he got back to Colorado State. How did he get back to Colorado State? And what was it like when they got there? And how have they built it, right? Because when they took over, they were just a mess in the APR. And now they've won 20 games a couple years in a row. And now they're favored to win the Mountain West. How did he rebuild it? Well, you're just going to have to download and listen to the next version. In the meantime, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on your iHeartRadio app or Fox Sports Radio. Reminder, you can send us all the requests of guests you can at Gottlieb Show, and I'll reach out. We'll sit them down. We'll talk with them. Thank you so much for downloading. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.